Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Mayaradha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvraja Gachara Sotir Sita Shri Shimana's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Kijaya Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Granga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pasaya Bhutale. Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasavade. Gauravani Vacharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschita Desitarane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 19, The Perfection of Spiritual Knowledge. We were actually supposed to cover some more verses yesterday, so 33 to 35, so I'll read those. And then today we have 36 to 39. So we have a lot of verses to cover the Srimad Bhagavatam today. Okay, we'll start with text 33. As you recall, in the previous verses, several verses, Uddhava was posing several questions to Krishna. And so this, beginning with text 33, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, the next 12 verses, which conclude this chapter, are all of Krishna's answers to Uddhava's questions. So we'll cover quite a few of those today. So let's see, 33, why don't we read the Sanskrit together, and then I'll read the translation. Sri Bhagavan Vacha, ahimsa satyam asteyam, Asango hira sanchaya, asikyam brahmacharyam cha, monam stairyam kshamabhayam, chaucham japas tapohoma, shraditi chyam madarchanam, tirtatanam parateha, tushtir acharya sevanam, ete yama sayiniyama, Ubayordvadasya smrita, pungsam upasitas tata, tata kamandahutihi. Translation. All these translations and purports by the disciples of the Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, nonviolence, truthfulness, not coveting or stealing the property of others, detachment, humility, freedom from possessiveness, trust in the principles of religion, celibacy, silence, steadiness, forgiveness, and fearlessness are the 12 primary disciplinary principles. Internal cleanliness, external cleanliness, chanting the holy names of the Lord, austerity, sacrifice, faith, hospitality, worship of me, visiting the holy places, acting and desiring only for the supreme interest, satisfaction, and service to the spiritual master are the 12 elements of regular prescribed duties. These 24 elements bestow all desired benedictions upon those persons who devotedly cultivate them. Now, for those of you who were here yesterday, Mother Nanda very nicely discussed, you know, these terms and even quizzed us all on them. So these first verses, Krishna is answering actually what? What were the first two qualities of the first two questions that Buddha asked? Who said that? Very good. Shesha wins the star today. Yama Niyama. Okay, so there's 12 yamas and 12 niyamas. These 24 are being described in these first verses. Now, the other 40 questions or so are answered in the next 10 verses, and we're going to cover about half of them here. So, text 36, let's just do the first verse together. Shamo man nishtata budher. Dhamma indriya samyama. Tatiksha dukkha samarsho. Jivo pashta jayo dhriti. Shamo man nishtata budher. Dhamma indriya samyama. Tatiksha dukkha samarsho. Jivo pashta jayo tritihi. Shamo man nishtata budher. Dhamma indriya samyamaha. Tatiksha dukkha samarsho. Jivo pashta jayo tritihi. Others? Vaishnavis? Go ahead. Vaishnavis? We've got three more verses we'll read together, starting with 37. Danda nyasa param danam kama tyaga stapa smritam svabhava vijaya shauryam satyam cha samadarshanam anyachcha sunrita vani kavibi parakirtita kamasva sangama shaucham Tyaga sanyasa uchite dharmam ishtam dhanam rinam yagnoham bhagavatama dakshina jnana sandesha pranayama parambalam. Okay, in interest of time, I'll just read the word for words without repeating. Shama, mental equilibrium, mat, in me. Nishtata, steady absorption. Buddhe, of the intelligence, Dhamma, self-controlled, Indriya, of the senses, Samyama, perfect discipline, Tatiksha, tolerance, Dukkha, unhappiness, Samarsaha, tolerating, Jiva, the tongue, Upashta, the genitals, jaya, conquering, dhriti, steadiness, danda, aggression, nyasa, giving up, param, the supreme, dhanam, charity, kama, lust, tyagaha, giving up, tapaha, austerity, smritam, is considered, swabhava, one's natural tendency to enjoy, vijaya, conquering, shauryam, heroism, satyam, reality, cha, also, samadarshanam, seeing the Supreme Lord everywhere, anyat, the next element, truthfulness, cha, and, sunrita, pleasing, vani, speech, kavibihi, by the sages, parikirtita, is declared to be karmasu, in fruit of activities, asangama, detachment, shaucham, cleanliness, tyagaha, renunciation, sannyasa, the sannyasa order of life, uchite, is said to be dharma, religiousness, ishtam, desirable, dhanam, wealth, nrinam, for human beings, jagya, sacrifice, aham, I am, bhagavatama, the supreme personality of Godhead, dakshina, religious remuneration, jnana sandesha, the instruction of perfect knowledge, pranayama, the yogic system of controlling the breath, param, the supreme, balam, strength. There will be no quiz today. Translation and purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Absorbing the intelligence in me constitutes mental equilibrium, and complete discipline of the senses is self-control. Tolerance means patiently enduring unhappiness, and steadiness occurs when one conquers the tongue and genitals. The greatest charity is to give up all aggression toward others, and renunciation of lust is understood to be real austerity. Real heroism is to conquer one's natural tendency to enjoy material life, and reality is seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere. Truthfulness means to speak the truth in a pleasing way as declared by great sages. Cleanliness is detachment and fruit of activities, whereas renunciation is the sannyas, order of life. The true desirable wealth for human beings is religiousness, and I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, am sacrifice. Religious remuneration is devotion to the acharyas and the purpose of acquiring spiritual instruction, and the greatest strength is the pranayama system of breath control. Report. Lord Krishna here describes those qualities that are desirable for persons advancing in human life. Shama, or mental equilibrium, means to fix the intelligence in Krishna. Mere peacefulness without Krishna consciousness is a dull and useless state of mind. Dhamma, or discipline, means first to control one's own senses. If one wants to discipline one's children, disciples, or followers without controlling one's own senses, one becomes a mere laughingstock. Tolerance means to patiently endure unhappiness, such as that provoked by the insults or negligence of others. One must also sometimes accept material inconvenience to carry out the injunctions of the scriptures, and that unhappiness must also be patiently endured. If one is not tolerant of the insults and abuse of others, nor tolerant of the inconveniences that may arise from following authorized religious scriptures, it is simply foolishness for him to make a whimsical show of tolerating extreme heat, cold, and pain, and so on, just to impress others. Considering steadfastness, if one does not control the tongue and genitals, then any other steadfastness is useless. Real charity means to renounce all aggression toward others. If one gives money to charitable causes but at the same time engages in exploitative business enterprises or abusive political tactics, one's charity is worth nothing at all. Austerity means to give up lust and sense gratification and to observe prescribed vows such as Ekadasi. It does not mean inventing whimsical methods of torturing the material body. Real heroism is to conquer one's lower nature. Certainly everyone likes to propagate his own fame as a brilliant person, but everyone is also subject to lust, anger, greed, and so forth. Therefore, if one has to conquer those lower characteristics generated from the modes of passion ignorance, one is a greater hero than those who merely destroy their political opponents through intrigue and violence. One can develop equal vision by giving up jealousy and envy, by recognizing the existence of the soul within the material body. This attitude pleases the Supreme Lord, who then reveals himself, solidifying forever one's equal vision. Merely describing things that exist does not constitute the last word in the perception of reality. One must also see the true spiritual quality of all living entities and all situations. Truthfulness means one should speak in a pleasing way so there will be a beneficial effect. If one becomes attached to pointing out the faults of others in the name of truth, then such fault-finding will not be appreciated by saintly persons. The bona fide spiritual master speaks the truth in such a way that people can elevate themselves to the spiritual platform, and one should learn this art of truthfulness. If one is attached to material things, his body and mind are understood to be always polluted. Cleanliness, therefore, means to give up material attachment, not merely to frequently rinse one's skin with water. Real renunciation is giving up one's false sense of proprietorship over one's relative and wife, and not just giving away material objects, while real wealth is to be religious. Sacrifice is the personality of God in himself, because the performer of sacrifice, to be successful, must absorb his consciousness in the personality of Godhead and not in temporary material rewards that may accrue from sacrifice. Real religious remuneration means that one should serve saintly persons who can enlighten one with spiritual knowledge. One may offer remuneration to a spiritual master who has enlightened him by distributing the same knowledge to others, thereby pleasing the acharyas. Preaching work thus constitutes the highest form of remuneration. By performing the pranayama system of respiratory control, one can easily subdue the mind, and one who can, in this way, perfectly control the restless mind is the most powerful person. Om Agyanatam Randisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksirumitamina Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Ancha Kalpa Trivishcha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Satano Pavane Vyo Vaishmi Vyo Namaha. So, we have, as I said, answers to many, many questions, defining many spiritual principles and qualities. Any one of these could constitute an entire class. So rather than just, you know, give 45 seconds to each one, I decided to focus on one line that I thought was rather important in this. And that line is a text, must be about the second and 37. Actually, two lines the way it's broken up, one in the actually in the Sanskrit. And that is Svabhava Vijaya Shauryam Sachyam Cha Samadarshanam. Real heroism is to conquer one's natural tendency to enjoy material life. And reality is seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere. So there were some nice parts in the purport about real heroism is to conquer one's lower nature. Everyone likes to propagate his own fame as a brilliant person, but everyone is also subject to anger, greed, and lust. Therefore, one must conquer these lower characteristics generated from the mode of passion. And then the second part, reality is seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere. One can develop equal vision by giving up jealousy and envy, by recognizing the existence of the soul within the material body. Then, of course, one recognizes the Supreme Lord, which reinforces that Samadarshana conception. In Vishnachakrabari Thakur's purports on these verses, very similar, but you know, just a little bit different tweak on it. This is what Vishnu says about heroism. Real heroism is opposition to one's nature of rajas and tamas, lust and anger, or to advertising one's qualities such as learning. It is not merely prowess in battle. And then about Samadarshana, he says, truth means seen equally everywhere. One should see others suffering as one's own, giving up harsh qualities like envy and hatred. And then he quotes Bhagavad Gita, 632, I consider that practicing yogi who sees equally everything is equal to himself in all circumstances, whether in happiness or suffering, to be the topmost yogi. Now, these two partial verses or one long verse have two different ideas, but I think they're closely connected and they're very mutually supporting conceptually. The first part is talking about one who's a real hero is one who's able to give up material conception, pride, the lower modes of nature, and then one is able to see the spiritual equality in others by dint of giving up that and developing humility. And the second part, with equal vision of all living entities, Samadarshana, and seeing the Supreme Lord, one can therefore then give up the lower modes and develop the qualities of humility. So in other words, you know, very, very close concepts here between these two lines. They're somewhat different ideas, but yet they work together very nicely, as of course do all of these verses work together, because they explain the qualities of one who is advanced in Krishna consciousness. So let's look at these a little closer. Why is one who gives up his lower nature considered heroic? Now, we don't use that term a lot. Usually you think of a hero as someone like Arjuna, you know, or a great war, Ramachandra, a great warrior in battle, one who's able to conquer the enemies. But here it says that one who actually can conquer one's lower nature, who can conquer the modes of tamas and rajas, ignorance and passion, is the true hero. Because it is very, very difficult to overcome our conditioned nature. So that's the first aspect of it. That this is such a difficult struggle for those of us conditioned in the material world that it takes some courage and heroism to even begin the process of taking up Krishna consciousness and trying to give up material things. And secondly, the other aspect that's been pointed out here in both purports is that it's difficult not to advertise one's qualities such as learning. In other words, if one is somewhat successful in the struggle to give up the material modes and to acquire Krishna conscious knowledge, then the natural tendency is to become proud of that knowledge and renunciation. And therefore, that's the other thing that takes struggle and even courage, is to take the humble position and give up one's pride, even one's own learning or one's spiritual advancement. So these material desires that we have been accumulating for a while. We don't know how long. We don't know how many lifetimes, how many millennia we have been in this material world through lifetime after lifetime. And therefore, in every one of these lifetimes, we acquire material desires. We acquire habits. We acquire different conditioned conceptions of life. All of these anartas, you know, these bad habits and what's the other one? Samskaras? Or mental conceptions, right? Is that the word for samskara? Impressions. That's what I was looking for. Mental impressions that are created lifetime after lifetime, which lead to, of course, the actual behaviors and habits. So this is many lifetimes trying to overcome these. In fact, in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport to 1111, Nectar Devotion, when he's defining Anyavilasita, he says part of the meaning of that is it means devoid of other desires which are as deep-rooted as one's nature. Now that means, of course, our conditioned nature, not our eternal spiritual nature. But that conditioned nature is so strong, is so deep-rooted, that it's very difficult to overcome these things. In 11.14.18, a few chapters ago, we read, "My dear Uddhava, if my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be harassed by material desires. But because of his unflinching devotion for me, he will not be defeated by sense gratification." So, here, as in many verses, Krishna is saying, yes, it's very difficult. Yes, you will be harassed by material desires. The devotee not fully conquered his senses. Well, what kind of devotee is that? It's like us. In other words, you know, the devotee who has not reached the pure stage of devotion, the sadhaka, still has conditioned nature, still has desires. And he'll be bothered. We will be bothered by those desires. But because of strong faith, unflinching devotion, we will not be defeated. In the purport, it's stated, because of previous bad habits and immaturity, even a sincere devotee may be harassed by lingering attraction to the bodily concept of life. but his unflinching devotion to our Lord Krishna will act. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives the following two examples. A great warrior may be struck by a weapon of his enemy, but because of his courage and strength, he is not killed or defeated. He accepts the blow and goes on to victory. Similarly, one may contract a serious disease, but he takes the proper medicine, he will be quickly cured. So again, these examples are given in sort of a courage and heroism that it takes to continue the struggle against Maya. So we're at this anartha nivritti stage, that we are clearing our past activities, our past desires, and our past bad habits. And there's dangers along that path. Prabhupada often said, it's like he called it the razor's edge. In other words, one slight mistake, you know, and you're cut. Like, you know, when you're raising, you know, like I long ago gave up using a regular razor because I cut myself all the time. So, you know, so I use electric. So it's a fact. You know, one little slip of the razor and you're cut. And so that's how being in this material world is trying to perform bhakti. You know, so while we're becoming purified, there's even a possibility of fall down due to our past lifetimes of association with this material world. But of course, according to Bhagavad Gita 9:30, despite a fall down, the devotee is considered saintly. In a purport, Srila Prabhupada discusses an interesting concept. He says there's conditioned life and constitutional life. Right? Conditioned life is what we experience due to our contact with material laws of nature. Constitutional life is the spiritual life, the original position of the Atma as spirit, soul, and eternal relationship and service of Krishna. And Prabhupada says, for a devotee, those should be parallel, but sometimes they may be opposed. And if those two, conditional life and constitutional life, come into opposition, there can be a fall down. But it's described that as not necessarily a disqualified devotee if they are properly situated. And properly situated, it's very important. It doesn't just mean I can just go on committing any sinful activity and 9:30 excuses me. I just go on and, you know, sin and confess, probably condemn that, you know, that activity. So properly situated means engaged fully in devotional service. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says there must be both action and engagement in Krishna consciousness for one to, you know, to be able to still be considered saintly and to go on in devotional service nicely. So we don't misunderstand it's a license for fall down, but we do understand that these things may happen in the material world. But the important thing is that, first of all, the mood of the devotee is one is disgusted by that activity or by those attachments one has. He repents his activity and he continues on. That's Krishna Bhagavatam 11:20-27. My devotees should remain happy, worship me in great faith and conviction. Even though he sometimes is engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows all sense gratification leads to a miserable result and sincerely repents such activity. So that's the mood of the devotee. And Vishwanath says, in conclusion, that the sincere devotee has more determination toward bhakti than inclination for material things. So both are there. Desire for bhakti, inclination for material things. But if one is sincere, we try to have more determination toward bhakti. Which leads us to this conception of humility. First of all, we should obviously be humble, considering our struggles in the material world. But this idea of humility is described in this verse, these verses and purports we're reading about how one doesn't advertise one's good qualities. Okay? And this humility also is part of the next part of equal vision. So that's another way that these connect together. That as one struggles in the material world and is trying to overcome these things, one develops humility, and humility goes hand in hand with this idea of samadarshana, or equal vision. Of course, we know the verse, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision. And Prabhupada Pandita Samadarshana defines it as the wise sees with equal vision. He translates Pandita as humble sage. Right, in other words, you could just say Pandita just means sage, but Prabhupada called it humble sage because that's part of developing equal vision, of developing humility, of understanding the equality of all the people. I'm not superior to anyone, and I'm certainly not superior to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what to speak about other jivas. So with that equal vision, understanding we are all part and parcel of Krishna, naturally humility will develop. So So the devotee is unconcerned with material opulence, knowing it's temporary. He really takes no pride in anything pertaining to the body, sees everyone as part of Krishna, and sees oneself as fairly insignificant compared to the greatness of Krishna. And of course, humility is one of the first listed qualities of knowledge in Bhagavad Gita 13.8. Okay. Now, the next quality that we're talking about, of course, and we begin to talk about, is the idea of equal vision. It says one must give up envy and jealousy of others having this equal vision. And Vishwanathacharya Thakura says, and see others' suffering as one's own. So part of our understanding of others, of seeing the equality in others, and developing compassion, is we see others' suffering as one's own. This is nicely described in a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.10.14. This one says, this was Narada Muni speaking to, it must have been 10, was that the, you know, wasn't it the, you know, the sons of Govera? I think it was to, yeah, I think that's, I think it was to Nala Govera Manugriva. I think that's where it's down, the 10th chapter. Anyway, Narada Muni speaking, I know that. He says, by seeing their faces, one whose body has been pricked by pins can understand the pain of others who are pinpricked. Realizing that this pain is the same for everyone, he does not want others to suffer in this way. But one who has never been pricked by pins cannot understand this pain. Okay, nice example here. And Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, says, there is a saying, the happiness of wealth is enjoyable by a person who has tasted the distress of poverty. There's also another common saying, I think this is common, this is Bengali, I believe, Vandya ki bhunjiva parsava vedana. A woman who has not given birth to a child cannot understand the pain of childbirth. So here we have three examples in the verse in purport. Those who are born, of course the pinprick, if you haven't been pained yourself, you can't understand very well others. If you're born in wealthy family, you may be unsympathetic to those who are in poverty. But one rising from poverty often has the understanding of those who are poor. And sometimes those people, when they become wealthy, then they become philanthropists and charitable and try to give back to others because they understand that others are also suffering like they did. And of course, childbirth, I think every mother will tell you that's self-explanatory. Yes, no one can understand the pain. I don't know this one by experience, but I certainly believe it. You can't understand the pain unless you've experienced yourself. So, compassion is an important quality of devotee. Bhagavad Gita 16.2 in the divine qualities, one is dhaya bhuteshu, mercy towards all living entities. So, compassion is an interesting concept. Sometimes another word we use is empathy in English language. Empathy is defined as the identification with or vicarious experiencing of the feelings, thoughts, or attitudes of another. So understanding the suffering of others, as was described in the verse we read, is the basis for Vaishnava compassion. However, spiritual compassion is deeper than the material concept of empathy, because it also includes the desire to alleviate the suffering of others, and specifically relieving the suffering by giving spiritual knowledge. So one may understand another's pain simply through witnessing others' experiences. And one who does so can experience, you know, that those in this material world are suffering. In the purport it said, by seeing their faces implies understanding a commonality of experience. I'm suffering in the material world, others are suffering in this material world. I've been relieved of that suffering through Krishna conscious knowledge and the mercy of my guru. Others can experience the same thing. So, higher than understanding of the pain of others is this idea of compassion or spiritual quality. And there's two parts to this. One is the understanding the suffering of others, to see outside one's own self. This is what's required. One must have a vision that goes beyond one's own perception, my own internal and external experiences, and to be able to understand how others are experiencing. And sometimes this is difficult for us. It's normal to have some inability to completely experience what another is experiencing, because we are all individual spirit souls. So, right, there's a difference. I can to some degree understand what you're thinking, feeling, willing, experiencing, but probably not totally, because we are distinct. But still, there's some ability to do that. And when one is not able to do this, that's an antisocial personality or a narcissistic personality, one who is very self-absorbed, only thinks of oneself, and can only relate to others in terms of one's own self, rather than seeing them as distinct, unique, having their own experiences, sufferings, hopes, thoughts in the world. So the second part, of course, is the desire to relieve the suffering of others. Best embodied, of course, by Prahlad Maharaj, 7th canto. Prahlad said to Lord Nrisingadev, "O best of great personalities, I am not all afraid of material existence, for wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them." So a Vaishnava is described as paradukha dukhi, because he's never distressed in any material condition of life, but he is distressed seeing others in a distressed condition. So we exhibit compassion really in three ways. First of all, we mean to be compassionate to ourselves, be forgiving of ourselves, knowing we are conditioned souls, and knowing that we are rightly situated on the path of devotional service. Secondly, we are compassionate to devotees. We try to make friendships with the devotees, to help the devotees, to serve the devotees. The best compassion is serving other devotees. And then we are compassionate to those who are suffering this material world. And we try to, this is talked about later in the purport, just don't have time to really get into it, but we try to help assist the mission of the spiritual master by showing this compassion to those who are in this material world still suffering because they don't know about Krishna consciousness. Okay? So, in, let's see, 4.8.34, Bhagavatam. "Every man should act like this. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. When he meets someone less qualified than himself, what does he do? Is he contemptful? Is he arrogant? Is he condescending? Is he, like, smug and superior? No. He should be compassionate toward him. And when he meets someone equal to himself, he makes friendships with him. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of the material world." Of course, those are the qualities of the devotees, of the different stages of devotees and how we relate to them. So, just to conclude a little bit about developing compassion. How do we do that? These are just a couple ideas I had. It's not the conclusive final answer. First, it comes from knowledge. We hear these things. We hear the Bhagavatam. We hear the qualities of devotees, of compassion, of mercy, of there's so many. I mean, how many different words do we have? Karuna. What are some of the others for mercy or compassion? Daya. Kripa. Yeah. Anyway, these are repeated, Lord Chaitanya, the most munificent incarnation. So this idea of compassion we hear repeatedly throughout our scriptures. And we see the examples. Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada, the Guru. We see repeated examples of the compassionate nature of devotees and how we should also become like this. Then our conviction must be there. Our faith must be strong. We have to be strong that we can to undergo difficulties, to take troubles, and know that this Krishna consciousness movement, this Krishna consciousness process is the best for all, and that we need to give it to others. It needs to be that conviction, that yes, this is what the conditioned souls need. Then we have to practice, right? Things come about through practice. It's not that just, well, if I think about it long enough, I'll become compassionate, or I'll become anything, or I'll become you know, knowledgeable or austere, or I'll become, you know, humble. No, it's not just simply through mental contemplation. It's through practical activity in Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada says. Bhakti, service. So, particularly about this idea of compassion, we develop compassion in the heart when we act compassionately by giving Krishna consciousness to others. So, Krishna within gives us guidance and purification. And I think all of us experience when you make any attempt, distribute prasadam, chant the holy name, distribute books to people, somehow talk to people, preach to people, try to tell people about Krishna consciousness, we experience something within us, right? We experience the mercy of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and Prabhupada. You know, that becomes manifest. And, you know, sometimes we can become a little proud, but generally speaking, we'll tend to develop compassion if we do this in the right mood. And of course, circling back to our original point of freedom from material desires, as we make spiritual advancement, as we become free of material desires, the heart becomes soft as our love for Krishna develops, and naturally that softening of the heart leads to compassion for all living entities and compassion to want to help others. In other words, stated simply, if we remain absorbed in ourselves, in my problems, in my issues, with, you know, it's all about me, we're not likely to develop compassion. When we try to step out of that mood and try to understand others, understand the pain, the suffering, the experience of others, and then try to actively help them in some way or serve them, in the case of devotees, and we serve everyone, we serve every living entity. We serve the non-devotees by giving them Krishna consciousness, right? When we do this, that compassion will develop within the heart. It's one of the good qualities of a Vaishnava. Okay, I'll stop at that point. If there are any questions, thoughts, reflections? Okay, go ahead, Prabhu. Oh, okay, over here, and then we'll go back to Prangavendra. Whoever gets the microphone gets to speak, I guess.
Wonderful class, wonderful topic. Such good time to spend to explore these things and discuss them. And I was hearing from a friend yesterday about a letter to Balabhanta Prabhu in 1975 about the importance of listening to people. This, and I have to look that letter up, but Prabhupada used the example of Mahaprabhu listening to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya for how many days? And listening and listening and listening, you know, respectfully listening. And through this, his heart was changed. He saw how Mahaprabhu was attentive and cared for him, and he was able to surrender and give up his position. So he was stressing this to Balabhanta Prabhu for some reason, I don't know his particulars, but the importance of really listening to each other, revealing one's mind and confidence, you know, that kind of intimacy, that's very healing and very powerful. To care enough, and there's a saying that people don't care what you know until they know that you care.
That's very good, yes.
And so that by really, really tending to each other, personally listening, we can help them relieve some of their burden and feeling alone, and we give ourselves a compassionate friend.
Yeah. And that's an excellent point. If we are going to have any help or influence to others, they have to feel that we care. And listening is the best way to establish that at the beginning. In other words, how much do you appreciate it when someone comes up to you and says, oh, I notice you're doing this, and then they correct you? Or they say, you know, if you're having this difficulty, I've got a solution for you, right? Aren't men are really good at that, right? You know, giving solutions rather than listening to, you know. Okay, so, yeah, but if we listen first, if we hear the other person, then first of all, we better understand that person. We better understand what the real issue is and how we can be more effective, perhaps. And also, even more importantly, we establish relationship. And when there's relationship, then there can be exchange, there can be learning, there can be help, right? In other words, if you have a problem, who do you go to? Don't you go to your friend, right? You go to somebody who you think cares about you, right? So it's in the same way. I mean, even if it's not like a deep friend, even just as a devotee, if we're relating to a non-devotee, if they feel there's some connection, some relationship, we care about them on some level, which we should, it's more likely to be success. Thank you for a very good point.
That's a very interesting point you hit, because recently we were studying Madhurya Kadambini of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur.
Mm.
And he says that it appears like that devotees are compassionate, but then he breaks down that it is not that devotees are compassionate, it is the bhakti when appears in the heart of the devotee naturally makes the devotee to be compassionate. It's not that the devotee is actually compassionate, the bhakti's nature. And then he gives the four symptoms. And he says this compassionate nature is a quality belongs to the inner world or spiritual world. And it is the freedom from the self-centeredness, not from action of being compassionate. And he says proportion to self-centeredness disappear, that much compassionate that devotee will become.
That's wonderful. I think that's what I was trying to say. I was said so much better, you know. What's the source? Tell me the source again.
Madhurya Kadambini.
Oh, Madhurya Kadambini. You don't remember which part it is?
Bengali's accent is heavy. Madhurya.
Okay. Madhurya Kadambini.
But it was because I was always thinking, like, how does it work, like, literally? He says the proportion. Because we want to be compassionate, but sometimes it feels like very difficult. And he says the proportion of absence of self-centeredness is what actually gives the energy for the body to cognize.
And it's interesting that it's actually, well, the first part you said, that it's a spiritual quality, quality of bhakti, and I think we could probably say the personification of that is Radharani, right? You know, Karunamayi, the personification of mercy, or the embodiment, you could say, or whatever. Embodiment, probably a better word. And so, yeah, it's that spiritual quality. And what is it then? As we become purified, we take on those more advanced spiritual qualities that are there. In other words, it's not like I'm compassionate, right? I think that's what you're trying to say. And in fact, if I think it's me that's been compassionate, I've defeated the whole point of developing compassion and humility, right? Yeah. Thank you. Excellent. Yeah, I think it's, you're probably, I think it is the second chapter. I've read it, but I couldn't recall. It's towards the beginning, I think. Yeah, okay, we've got two or three others. We'll try to go quickly. Janmashtami?
Yeah, it seems that, you know, there's that we hear these qualities of a devotee, and so we can try to do it. It seems like the point that Sri Govinda is making is that when it awakens, because of our spiritual advancement, that's when it's real. You know, it's a little bit kind of show battle when we try to do it.
Well, Prabhupada did also has made that point. That's the other side of it, is that we don't actually artificially develop them, but these good qualities naturally arise, right, as one advances in bhakti.
But I guess part of the process of sadhana is to practice doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And when we recognize we're not completely there, but by doing it, you made that point, you know, when we try to help devotees or help the non-devotees become devotees.
What was the example? I know there's a couple of different conversations where someone said, I don't feel what was it? And Prabhupada said, you just do it and then you'll develop it. Or I don't feel like surrendering. Well, you do it anyway and you know, and it'll develop. What was it? Yeah. And then your heart will change. Yeah. Yeah, there's a few examples like that Prabhupada gave, that sometimes, you know, even if the real deep feeling and conviction is not there, Well, it's sadhana. We do the activity, and therefore the consciousness changes, the heart becomes purified, and then eventually that quality will develop. Right? Okay. And by the way, don't ask me, I just want to say, it's so nice to see that you're up and around after major surgery here in Bhagavatam class. Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna. I'm just a young guy, so I don't know much. But
I'm an old guy, and I don't know much. So,
but the last few years, I've been trying to do some work helping people. Like, I volunteered at Alachua County Crisis Center, talking with suicidal people on the phone, and I worked at a dementia care center, taking care of the old people, and working with teenagers now.
Great.
And I find that these skills of listening, being caring, are very essential. At the same time, the more experience I get, the more I find that the people who need help the most often don't want help because they don't know how to help themselves and they don't acknowledge that. You know, they're kind of like an animalistic place because the brain's not developed or it's breaking down, drugs, you know, old age, young age, whatever. We're all suffering in this material world, so I really found it's essential to be very strong and firm to help other people and just to be very practical. And the bottom line is without Krishna consciousness, we can't really help anyone. It's just like we're all drowning in this material world, old age and death. So, you know, if I can get a old lady, you know, with her back like bending down, she can't even stand up straight to say Gauranga, you know, and Krishna, it's like I just feel fantastic at the end of the day, but I can, you know, I can break my back getting people out of bed and into bed and cleaned up and feeding them and all this and feel really miserable. So,
thank you.
You know, it's helping people. It's really a great way to learn.
I think
what it really means.
Yeah, you know, I think despite your saying that you're young, you actually have learned quite a bit. And that was a very, very wise and very deep understanding. I've had similar experiences. I've been counseling, you know, with people and devotees for many, many years. And the first thing you said, I've also seen, it's often, you know, the people who are really the most serious are the ones that will take help, and those who really need it the most often won't. You know, like, sometimes we've given, like, classes or seminars for couples, for grihasthas, and usually there's, you know, 10 couples in the room, and they're, like, the ones who are probably already doing the best. And I know that there's 20 more that really need it, and they don't come, you know. So, you know, yes, it's true. And I think the second part you said is an excellent realization that many of us have experienced, that no matter how you try to help somebody materially, which is not a bad thing to do, because we don't want to be hard-hearted, it's also even Bhaktisiddhanta said how householders should give in charity so they don't become hard-hearted. So we don't want to be callous towards the suffering of others, because the suffering is very real, and that's part of the compassion. But the answer is ultimately spiritual. The answer for everyone is ultimately giving them Krishna conscious, and whatever help that we give people, if we can put it in a Krishna conscious context, it's going to have so much more value. And like you said, sometimes all you can do is get someone to say Hare Krishna, or you give them, maybe bring in prasadam to give to people. Maybe that's all you can do. But even that is so vital. Prabhupada would say this often. If someone just heard the holy name, or someone took prasadam, someone gave one little thing, he would say, now their spiritual life has begun. So that woman that heard Gauranga, or you bring in some prasadam, their spiritual life has begun. Very good.
Yeah, can you give some practical examples of how sincere humility empowers the jiva and helps with our sadhana?
Wow. Sincere humility, how does it help us? I guess humility by its nature almost has to be sincere, doesn't it? Or it's not really humility. So I think it comes back to that idea of when Prana Govinda was quoting Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that idea of being self-absorbed, wasn't it? The idea that the more that we see from our own perspective, or what will benefit me, or even just being proud, you know, like that, then we don't develop real humility. And our help towards others becomes limited. In other words, we may do things that will be of some benefit to others,
But it's not going to be as beneficial if it comes from the pure heart, you know, if it comes from really the humble heart of the Vaishnava, you know, because people's that is felt and understood by people. I was trying to think how, the other day I was really thinking about this, that when Srila Prabhupada came to America, his accent was even kind of hard to understand. It's not like, you know, everybody just immediately could just grasp what to speak of the topic. The subject matter is so elevated. How did people understand Prabhupada? How did they accept Prabhupada? And it was because of his purity. And one of the qualities of that purity was humility, right? In other words, we understood when we heard and saw Prabhupada, here was a man who was not doing this for himself. He was doing this out of his compassion and his concern and his love for us. There was no other motivation. And that shone through with Prabhupada when you saw Prabhupada and you heard Prabhupada, right? You know, so when we, I don't know if I'm actually getting you exactly what your question was. How do we develop that?
Not so much how you develop it, how it empowers the giver,
yeah.
It helps with sadhana, for example.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the empowerment is just like I said with Prabhupada, the empowerment is there because, you know, we have effect and influence just by those good qualities. And how does it influence the jiva?
Yeah, impact how does it empower the jiva and how does it help with sadhana? For example, if you're really, truly, sincerely humble, because I've seen people who weren't, they were humble, but it was like a fake humility.
Sure.
But anyway, getting back to the real. If you're really sincerely humble, you won't make a fool of yourself by just, you know, coming from the other side of the spectrum.
Well, yeah. I think a good rule of thumb for me has always been sort of like the idea of stay within yourself, stay within your own level of realization. Don't try to purport yourself more than you are or more advanced than you are. And as far as your sadhana, obviously, the more humbly that we approach our sadhana and Krishna consciousness, then Krishna's going to be pleased, the guru's going to be pleased, it'll be most effective. And if we do that, then actual humility, actual compassion, all these qualities will develop. And they'll be there. So, yeah, sometimes we have to check ourselves. So it's kind of like we don't want to be artificially proud and we don't want to be artificially humble. You know, it's kind of like, but there was one story where, some devotee said to Prabhupada, he says, I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything. You know, in other words, don't even be proud of being the most fallen. So that is a good example. So we always have to keep in that mood. And it's not like it's easy. It's not like it's just a rote answer. Yeah, yeah, do this, do that. You know, it's a struggle. It's a lifetime, it's a lifetime struggle, but it's also a lifetime wonderful process of development and advancement. You know, and developing these qualities and increasing our sadhana. And also it goes hand in hand. You know, the sadhana, as our sadhana is strengthened, the qualities develop, as we try to approach sadhana with humility, then that is enhanced too. You know, so it's mutual, I think. Okay, and I think Madan Mohan hasn't spoken yet, so we'll give him the last word of the day. It's 9 o'clock.
I just remembered two things. One, the definition that Prabhupada gave for humility in that you mentioned, chapter 13, verse 8, was not being anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. And then, of course, this was he was explaining how this takes you out of the bodily conception of life, of the I and mine. And then there's, from traditional wisdom, they say humility isn't that you think less of yourself, but you think less about yourself. So
good.
You get intelligence according
to... So let's hear that again. Humility is not thinking less about yourself?
No, less of yourself.
Not thinking less of yourself, but thinking less about yourself.
Yeah.
Good.
That's
good. Okay. That's nice.
And so you're instrumental of assisting. According to your intelligence, or your desire, you get a particular type of intelligence. So if you're thinking about yourself, that humility is tinged with the pride. But if you're thinking about how to assist Prabhupada and Krishna and his mercy, then you're given a different kind of intelligence on what to say and what to do.
Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.